Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and it's Saturday. Time to go into the vault for an older episode of the show. This one originally aired on August 6th, 2019, and it was called Social Media is a Bummer. This is where we talked about Jaron Lanier's book, which was highly critical of social media.
That's right. 10 arguments for deleting your social media accounts right now. I think it's some excellent food for thought as we continue through 2020.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and we're back to a subject that may be familiar to you if you've been listening to the show for a bit. It's the next battle in the war against the machines.
That's right. As we've already discussed on the show, and I think it's obvious to most of our listeners, the wonders of interconnectedness that the web have given us have also unleashed some less than satisfying realities. You know, we worry about smartphone addiction and the degree to which these devices and the many apps they have on them have been engineered to game our attention. And then of late, there's been growing attention given to the role social media has in playing into, corporate and state manipulation, endangering democracy, our personal freedom, and our happiness. Mm-hmm. We've recorded a few different notable episodes on these topics.
Right. So I know you and Christian a while back did an episode. Now, this was years ago now, so the research has come a long way since then, I think. But you did an episode on what the measurable psychological effects of social media were.
Correct, yes.
I think this is still a developing field. Like, I notice a lot of conflicting findings when I read up on this. Like, is social media making us more lonely, more depressed, whatever? It seems like the answer to that question is it's complicated.
Right. And I think we'll discuss a little bit of this later on, too, that, you know, it also depends on how you're using social media, what your role is. Are you using social media as part of your job, et cetera?
Yeah. Then we also, you and I, Robert, did a couple of episodes within the past couple of years called the Great Eyeball Wars mm-hmm. that were primarily about the attention economy, about the fact that our devices and specifically, especially like social media platforms on those devices, but other platforms also are because they make their money by getting you to use them and pay attention through, you know, advertiser dollars. Like you are the product on these
right.
platforms. You're not the customer. And your attention is what is being sold to the advertisers. They're addicting us. And they're addicting us on purpose, pretty much.
Right. Like one of the, I think, the handiest metaphors is that a social media app on your smartphone turns your smartphone into a tiny slot machine.
Yes.
But while a Vegas slot machine is programmed to steal all of your money. Mm-hmm. This tiny slot machine is programmed to steal all of your time.
Your time and your attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wants you using it as much as possible. And the numbers on this are kind of freaky. Like when you actually measure how much time people spend on their smartphones, especially looking at apps like Facebook or, you know, other social media apps, they don't usually like what they find out when those numbers come in.
Right. And certainly we do have tools on a lot of our smartphones now to track our screen time and to keep tabs on and even set up little barriers to excessive use. Mm-hmm. But as far as I know, like most of that stuff is still very voluntary and then we're not dealing necessarily with the default settings on a phone.
Right.
Or certainly when you get a new phone, you tend to bring over your sort of legacy settings from the former phone. So, uh-huh. I think there's a huge argument to be made that that these companies are not really, going in head first in the battle to reduce your screen time.
Right. And then also we did a more recent episode called The Doppelganger Network where we talked about the jumping off point for that was an article that we read by Robert Sapolsky, the neuroendocrinologist, I think at Stanford. And he made a comparison between the effects of social media use and digital media more generally and the psychological conditions like Capgras delusion that cause this rift between recognition and familiarity in the brain. So it creates a kind of strange alienated world where normally you'd pair these experiences of cognitive recognition, you know, knowing that you recognize something you see and the feeling of familiarity with it. But that is kind of torn asunder by the dynamics of social media.
Yeah. And so I don't think, you know, the idea, this argument that, the social media is potentially dangerous, that it has ill effects. This is probably not new. I think everyone's heard somebody argue it to some extent. And we've even seen people make fun of the argument. For instance, one image that frequently makes the round is an old-timey photograph of like a subway car or a train full of individuals, everybody reading a newspaper, everybody's face hidden in a newspaper, uh-huh. and then using this to make fun of the argument that, everybody's just plugged into their phones and they're not connecting with each other,
right?
As if to say, well, this was exactly the same thing, but it's not. I think it's definitely worth driving home that the type of psychological involvement that's going on with a social media platform on a mobile device is entirely different than what you would find by just sticking your head into a book or a newspaper.
A book or a newspaper is not a real-time feedback device.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that kind of like poking fun at this argument does reveal is that you can take the argument too far and be kind of totalizing about it because it's important to recognize that the reason people use these services are because they do provide something that people want. You know, mm-hmm. people through social media are able to keep up with friendships that might have fallen by the wayside otherwise. You know, maybe long distance friendships. These platforms and these devices do enable all kinds of things in people's lives that are valuable and good.
Right, and you can certainly go overboard in kind of a Luddite response to it and say, well, the internet is bad or technology is bad. And I feel like everybody's going to have varying opinions. Like to one extreme, you may be convinced that social media is is leaning more and more toward the self-digestion of human civilization, or you may see nothing wrong with social media at all. You may say, look, Robert and Joe, I use my Instagram, I use my Facebook, I keep up with a few friends, a few celebrities or a few bands or what have you. I get the news through it, and that's it. And it doesn't greatly improve or harm harm my psychic experience of reality.
Yeah. And if that's what you believe, our goal is not to convince you that, no, you don't understand. It's actually ruining your life. I mean, you may very well have a perfectly healthy, limited relationship with social media, and you may be one of the people who's getting more out of it than it's getting out of you. But for a lot of people, I think we do want to make the case that that is not what's going on.
Right. I would say that most of us, even if you can say, honestly, that you have a healthy relationship with social media, you can probably not say the same for everyone in your circle.
Right.
There's probably somebody or several people that the display signs of unhealthy usage. So in this episode, we're gonna look at some arguments against social media. Specifically, we're going to be discussing an author by the name of Jaron Lanier and his 2018 book, 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now.
It's a great title. It gets right to the point.
It does. And it is a fabulous little book that Joe and I both read for this episode. It's short. It's something on the order of, 146 pages long.
It's extremely accessible. Like, he did not make this a high-level computer science intellectual argument. It is written so that I think pretty much anybody could understand it. It's very accessible. It's very ground level. And I think it makes a pretty compelling case that at least – well, his argument is that social media in the business model that exists today is doing more harm than good, and our best way of fighting that harm is – to have everybody get off of these platforms.
Right, because this will force the companies involved to actually implement changes.
Right. And so his argument is not one against technology, and it's not even necessarily against one against a certain form of social media.
Right.
It's against a particular business model that powers social media. And that business model, I think, is what he ends up calling the bummer business model. It's a business model that is paid for by behavioral modification.
Yes, bummer, B-U-M-M-E-R, which Lanier says stands for Behaviors of Users Modified and Made into an Empire for Rent.
It's clever having an acronym because right. It sticks with you.
And yeah, it's clever and it's a little bit funny. And that can be said for the entire book. Despite it being a fairly serious topic with some potentially serious ramifications for humanity at large and for individual self-worth, it is a humorous read at times, and it is fun to read. So I can't recommend it highly enough. This is a book you can read on the train, in the plane, on a toilet. It makes for a great but important casual read.
Yeah. And we've talked about maybe getting him on the podcast sometime soon, and that would be great to have a conversation with him. But today we just wanted to talk about maybe a couple of the arguments that he brings up in the book and our thoughts about them.
Yeah, we're not going to attempt to regurgitate the entire book because the book is already
speaks for itself.
It already speaks for itself. So we'll start, though, by just talking about Jaron Lanier himself. Mm-hmm. You might be familiar with him already. Perhaps you're not. Perhaps you've just read his name and thought it was pronounced Jaron Lanier, which is how I've been pronouncing it in my mind.
That's how I've said it on the show a lot.
Yeah. But anyway, he is a scientist, a musician, and a writer. He is a major figure in the realm of virtual reality, having founded the VR company VPL Research in the 1980s. And while he didn't coin the term virtual reality, this is generally attributed to French playwright Antonin Artaud in 1938, he did popularize it. He helped create the first commercial VR products and introduced avatars, multi-person virtual world experiences, and prototypes of major VR applications such as surgical simulation. He was involved in the creation of the Nintendo Power Glove.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, now you're playing with power.
Yeah. Which I have to say, the Power Glove, I never had one as a kid, but I saw people with them. I knew people who had them. And it was this instrument of wonder. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was all that practical as a gaming device, but I think it inspired a lot of people. And I also love seeing, especially 1990s science fiction fiction where they have reused a power glove as part of like a cybernetic outfit for somebody. Anyway, he was also involved with the creation of the headset, apparently, for the 1992 film The Lawnmower Man.
So you're really bringing out the hits here.
Yeah.
And I think this is probably not the stuff that usually gets highlighted about his career.
Well, but it's some of the stuff that I think some of our listeners might be familiar with.
Exactly.
I should point out that he's not credited on Lawnmower Man, but he does get a thanks on the far superior sci-fi work Minority Report.
Oh, okay.
More to the point, though, he's an author of several books, such as 2006, Information is an Alienated Experience, You Are Not a Gadget, a Manifesto from 2010, Who Owns the Future from 2013, and Dawn of the New Everything from 2017.
Now, I tend to think of him kind of as a technology philosopher, and I really like a lot of his approach because it's got a healthy skepticism about overhyping technology and what it can do. And at the same time, he's not anti-technology. He's clearly somebody who loves digital technology, loves computers. And, he's worked with them his whole career. And so he doesn't end up saying, throw your smartphone in the fire, flush it down the toilet, smash it with a hammer. It's not an anti-technology message. He actually has a very specifically tailored message, trying to identify exactly what it is about the social media platforms specifically as they exist today that's causing problems for us and for our society, and how could they be changed?
Yeah, ultimately, he's an optimist. Like, he's presenting an optimistic view of the future, like certainly highlighting problems, but discussing how we can address them, mm-hmm. Which I love. I feel like I've spent too much of my life looking at more pessimistic views of reality and dystopian views of reality, and I've gotten to the point where those just don't serve me anymore. So I far prefer reading an author like Jaron Lanier. Mm-hmm. So the book in question, I have to talk about the cover of it, because the cover is very simple, just a black and red text on a white background and a silhouette of a cat walking off the cover of the book.
And the cat is a central metaphor in the book.
Right, because as he points out, as much as we love dogs.
I love dogs.
You do love dogs, and I love dogs too, just I don't own one. But as much as we love dogs, we domesticated the dog. The cat arguably domesticated itself. It interacts in our lives more on its terms. You were at great pains to attempt to train the cat, as anyone who's ever certainly tried to shoot a film about cats can attest to.
Uh-huh.
So Lanier argues that social media is essentially turning us into well-trained dogs, but we should really strive to be cats, able to dictate our involvement in the relationship at hand, to scratch the hand that feeds us if we so wish, to sleep wherever we choose, refuse food, walk on all the furniture. ultimately, we should want to be cats. We don't want to be social media's dog.
Yeah. And also, while he's advising people to quit social media, he's making an argument, and it's not a totalizing argument. I mean, he realizes mm-hmm. that different people are in different circumstances, that it's not a choice that will work for everybody.
Right. Like, he's very clear on the fact that quitting social media is a privilege.
Yeah.
And not everybody's able to do it. A lot of people own a business or part of their job entails them using social media.
I know some people like that.
Yeah, and they're trapped in it. You just can't walk away from it. Or you might be shackled to it more socially. Like, well, if I stop using Facebook, how am I going to connect with my friends who all live in another city and I just moved to a place where I don't know anybody? There are all these arguments to be made. And so he's not drawing this firm line in the sand and saying, the winner's over here, loser's over there, or anything of the sort. And he's certainly not arguing that, we should all go and make a big dramatic to-do about quitting social media either, because I think we all see that occasionally on our feed too.
That's the most embarrassing thing when you see somebody post a lot about how they're quitting and then mm-hmm. they quit for a week and then they're back.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. And in fact, I shared something about this book on my private social media feed. And immediately, like, somebody was like calling me out for having posted about quitting social media on social media. But of course, I think
ultimately, what's wrong with that?
I mean, where are we going to talk about leaving social media but social media?
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
This episode where we're discussing his arguments, we're not necessarily saying everybody's got to get off social media, but I do think these are some interesting arguments, very worth considering.
Right.
We're discussing these on an episode that will be promoted on social media because that is part of the distribution business model of this podcast.
Exactly.
It's like, this is how, you know, one way that we reach listeners. And if we don't do this, it won't reach as many listeners. So I don't know. How do you balance that? Is like, are you actually doing better if you say, well, let's not post the episode on social media so fewer people will hear it?
Yeah, thus is the world, thus have we made it. But at any rate, Lanier also ultimately says, like, hey, I'm not even saying quit social media forever. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately he's hopeful that social media can be corrected, that we can come back to a version of social media that is not harmful to us in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And then also he's saying, like, you know, quit for a while and come back. That's the only way you'll have any kind of, like, insight on what it's doing to you. Like, this will help give you the vantage point by which to understand the interaction between your life and these bummer systems.
All right. Well, maybe we should take a quick break, and then when we come back, we can discuss a couple of the arguments from the book and our thoughts about them.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back. The book we're discussing is Jaron Lanier's 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now. You're probably wondering, what are those 10 arguments? Mm-hmm. We're not going to regurgitate all 10 arguments here. If you want to know what they are, you should pick up a copy of it, mm-hmm. because without even opening the book, all 10 are listed on the back.
Right.
Which is handy. You know, you can instantly see what you're in for. We're going to be talking about, I think, basically four of the arguments and discussing them a bit here for you.
Yeah, some in more depth than others. Now, one thing that we should talk about up front, because it's sort of a foundational argument that feeds into all the others, is his point that, in Lanier's words, due to social media, you are partially losing your free will. Mm-hmm. So one of his core arguments, on which many of the others rest, is that social media is at heart a mass program of behavior modification for rent. That is how these companies make money. So if you're Facebook, the way that you make money is that people pay you to have some kind of influence on users of Facebook. And that influence could be a very traditional, normal style of advertising, the kind of thing that, you know, that happens everywhere and most people aren't bothered by, right? Because it's clear what's happening. You're just seeing an ad for a product that somebody thinks you might want. And, you know, there's the ad and you might go buy it. That's, you know, we're not generally very bothered by that.
Right. Always reminds me of the moment in Futurama where Fry encounters in the future an advertisement in his dream.
That's a little creepier.
He finds it intrusive and he says, you know, we didn't have that. And in my time, we just had advertisements, you know, all over the place and in the sky and on the billboard. I mean, certainly we do live, even without social media, we live in an age of just ubiquitous advertising.
Yeah. And, you know, that is... This is one thing that he does sort of attack, is the problem that the web arose on an advertising pay-for model. Back in the early days of the web, there was this idea that everything needed to be free to access. You couldn't charge people to get stuff on the web, but then how do you pay for producing that stuff?
Yep.
Somebody's got to make it. You know, they've got to get paid somehow. So what happens? Well, you'd pay for it by showing advertising along with the thing, and the advertisers would pay for what you're seeing.
Right. And of course, again, coming back to podcasting, we're not blind to the fact that that's essentially what you have with this podcast.
Yeah.
This podcast is provided to you for free, but you have to put up with advertisements.
Right. Now, I don't really mind that from a podcast point of view.
Right.
Because when I listen to podcasts and when I make a podcast, I generally think the advertising that's happening there is fairly straightforward. It's pretty clear what's going on. Somebody's pitching you a product.
Right. You know. I mean, likewise on television. Of course, television started off with the same model, and he discusses this. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, here's the signal, here's some programming, but here are also some advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, without getting into some of the, you know, the trickier forms of television advertising and product integration and so forth, you're still dealing with a situation where it's like, I'm watching a show. Okay, now I'm watching an ad.
Yeah.
Now I'm watching the show again.
Right. But even with other things, you know, like sponsored content and stuff like that. I mean, I think there's a big difference between what's clear and what's sneaky.
Yeah.
I think generally people tend to be okay with advertising when it's clear what's going on, when, you know, they're told who's paying for what they're seeing, and it's clear what the person who's paying for what they're seeing wants them to do. Usually it's like buy my product or become a member of my service or something like that. That's the kind of thing that I usually feel fine about, that most people tend to feel fine about. What's going on with social media, according to Lanier's argument, is that there is a much sneakier, more subtle, and perhaps more sinister thing happening, which is that our behavior is being modified in ways that are not clear, that are not obvious to us, ways that we're not aware of, and we oftentimes, in fact, most of the time, don't know who's doing it.
Right. And I think we all have those moments using a product like Facebook where something, an advertisement will pop up, or perhaps a post even made by a friend will pop up, and you'll stop for a second and wonder, why was that served to me?
Like, yeah, why am I seeing this?
Yeah, what have I done? What sort of interactions on my part demographic information on my part has led to this being put in my face?
But there's a good chance that it's either serving the supply model of Facebook, which is trying to keep you engaged on the platform for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. They just want to keep you on there so they can modify your behavior more, gather more data about you, show you more ads. So that's one thing. They might be just showing you it to you because their vast collection of data shows that when you see stuff like this, you use Facebook for a longer period of time.
Right.
Or you log back on more often later in the day. So that might be one thing. But the other thing might be that you're seeing that thing because somebody has targeted you for some kind of effect. They want to generate some kind of effect. And this could be a like become my customer kind of effect, or it could be something else. It could be an effect like, we want to make people stay home instead of go out and vote today.
Now, at this point, I do want to drive home as well that one thing that Lanier is very clear on is that he is making no argument that there is like a room at Facebook or Twitter or wherever where like evil operations go on, that there's like a sinister cabal in any of these organizations that are sitting down and saying, what can we do to destroy the human soul or anything like that?
Right. There's not a mwahaha committee.
Right.
There is instead there are decisions being made by people about what types of incentives will be algorithmically optimized.
Right.
And so that is something where it's not like the humans who operate in these companies don't bear responsibility.
Right.
They do, but they're generally not trying to ruin the human race. They're not trying to say what's the worst thing we can do to our users.
Right. That would just be a simplification of something that is a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
And it's taking place not on the scale of even an individual or individuals, but taking place on the scale of a corporation.
What Lanier argues is that bad business incentives, which prioritize behavior modification, are leading to the creation of algorithms that sort of automatically commit these behavior modification schemes. And so behavior modification can be linked to traditions in the behaviorist school of psychology, which flourished in the 20th century. We've talked on other episodes of the show about like B.F. Skinner and behaviorism. Behaviorism sometimes gets demonized, and there are definitely really good reasons to be historically critical of the behaviorist trend in the history of psychology, but it also wasn't entirely wrong. Like, behaviorism, I think, could be credited with trying to make psychology a more objective science. But it also, you know, a common criticism is that it sort of treats the human brain like a black box. You know, conditioning goes in, behavior comes out, and whatever happens inside just isn't really important. But one thing that it did show is that if you treat the human brain like this kind of like mystery machine, mm-hmm. where you just kind of like put conditioning in and keep calibrating until you get the output behavior you want, you can actually change behavior in an extremely effective way like that. Behavioral conditioning can be very powerful. And Lanier's argument is that modern social media is sort of almost a perfect vehicle for refining behavioral conditioning because it can collect extremely minute data about you and lots of it because, of course, it has, you know, this connection. It records everything you do and all the stuff you do on social media. There's actually a lot of things you do on social media that they can learn a lot about, from your brain states to where you are through location tagging to what you spend money on. You know, your linked accounts, to the words you use reflecting your moods. Like, they know a lot about you and about how what they show you affects what you do.
Right. Like, you know, I would be loath perhaps to say that they know us better than we know ourselves, but I feel like they often, these platforms often know us better than we are perhaps prepared to admit to ourselves.
Yeah. Well, they know things about you that are different from the way you think about yourself.
Yes.
They know about you from a behavioral conditioning standpoint where they can track in a really minute way what conditioning goes in and what behavior comes out. We tend not to think of ourselves that way. We tend to think of ourselves from the inside out. We think about our own mind states. You know, we tell a narrative about our behaviors in which everything is rationalized to make sense. So it's often we feel kind of demeaned when it's suggested that we are vulnerable to behavioral conditioning. It's like, mm-hmm. No, I'm not. You know, it's like how people think advertising doesn't work on them.
Right.
You know, like, no, I'm not more likely to buy a product because I saw a commercial for it. But, you know, yeah, you probably are. I mean, we just tend to think we're more mentally independent of the effects of stimuli than we actually are.
Or we will criticize it and say it doesn't affect us on one platform, and then on another we'll celebrate it. Mm-hmm. Without naming any names, you know, one might use a particularly popular music streaming service. Mm-hmm. And you might go, wow, I really love the algorithm on this thing. It really knows what I'm into. It
Yes. Gets
me. It keeps giving me musical suggestions that are totally on point.
Yeah.
And you have to stop sometimes. Like, well, I guess that's a good thing, but is it really?
Yeah. So social media platforms, they can gather all this data about you, but also they have extreme psychological power over you. I mean, especially, you know, the big one to think about is Facebook. Just like, it's this almost perfect machine for maximizing potential and behavior modification. It can make you feel and think what it wants with astonishing effectiveness just by showing you certain things that it has figured out, that when it shows these things to people like you, you tend to react by behaving a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it can just keep calibrating those efforts more finely and finally with extremely high quality feedback based on the way it tracks your behavior and all the ways we mentioned earlier. So this is his basic argument. And you can see that companies like Facebook are interested in always getting tighter and tighter control of the data and feedback about you in these sorts of ways. I was just reading a story the other day in the MIT Tech Review about Facebook being involved in funding research on a wearable headband that could supposedly read your thoughts.
Oh.
Now, I don't think we should get overly alarmed about like this one particular news story, because mm-hmm. this kind of technology is probably very crude at this point. You know, it doesn't tell you a lot today.
Yeah, we're not going to go from like zero to Black Mirror in a year on this particular front.
Right. But I do think the fact that Facebook is funding this kind of research should tell us something. They want to get deeper. They want to go further. They want to get closer and closer to your brain to know exactly how you're reacting to things in real time all the time. They want sort of like infinitely precise and finely calibrated data about you. And why would they want that? It's because it gives them better control over what you do, and that control can be rented out to sponsors. And again, and those sponsors could be fairly straightforward. They could be somebody trying to get you to buy their brand of shoes, or it could be a government trying to control what you do on a certain day, or control how you feel about a political movement.
Absolutely, and certainly the involvement of other states or operatives acting on the part of on the behalf of other states has certainly been in the news a great deal recently.
Well, yeah, it's very strange that I don't know if people would have predicted 10 years ago. Maybe they did, and I wasn't aware of it. That social media would start to become a major statecraft and national security concern.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, I think we were all probably in the same boat, you know, for the most part. When social media started up, it just seemed like a thing that was a fun way to connect with a few other people that you knew and maybe meet some new people.
It's cool.
But, yeah, and it was, you know, for the most part, you know, it was just you and friends and potential new friends on there, and your parents weren't on it yet. Major politicians were not on it yet. Major governments were seemingly not involved yet.
Well, I mean, I don't want to demonize it too much, but I mean, it's kind of the addiction model, right? It's like, you know, your first dose of this drug is free. Maybe your first free, several doses, you get hooked. And then what Lanier talks about, a big issue going on with these companies, is that there is this problem of network effects, right? Mm-hmm. Network effects are the thing that happens in digital media businesses where people tend to get locked into a service. And once people are locked into a service, it's very hard for there to be an effective competitor and get people to move over there. People are already on Facebook. If you tried to start a better Facebook today, and people have tried to start like nonprofit Facebooks, nobody goes over there.
Right. I mean, I've joined those before and it lasts like an afternoon.
Yeah. You're already, people are on Facebook because that's where their friends are and that's where that's where everything's happening. It's network effects that keep people locked in once they're already there. And once everybody's there, you can kind of like lock the doors and then start doing whatever you want inside.
Yeah. And you can check out anytime you like, right?
But you can never leave. Yeah. Yep.
All right, so we're skipping around a bit, but another argument, basically the fifth argument that Lanier makes, is that social media is making what you say meaningless.
Yeah.
And the core argument here comes down to context. Now, entering into this argument, I personally thought about the rather simple example that I'm sure many of you are thinking of right now, an ambiguous text message or email that is taken out of context because there are limitations to what we can typically convey in these, you know, limited, generally short form communication formats. You know, an emoji can only do so much to provide context to what you're saying.
You ever notice how if you listen to a friend of yours talk about something, it sounds normal and fine. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to a snippet of a stranger's conversation, they sound like a complete moron and it's like embarrassing.
Or at best, like a cryptic alien, mm-hmm. where you're just like, what was that? I'll never know.
But do you know, I mean, and it's not like strangers happen to be like, there's something wrong with people you don't know as opposed to people you do know, mm-hmm. is that when you know somebody, you have context based in their personality and your relationship with them. What they're saying makes sense to you,
right?
Because you know them and you know how they generally think about things and all that. If you didn't know this person, you just happened to overhear them as, you know, you walk by on the sidewalk and they were saying the same thing that would normally that would sound normal to you as part of a conversation, you might think like, wow, what a freak.
I know. People probably think the same thing about me all the time.
Oh, I'm sure people think that about me. I mean, I think about this all the time. Like, I'll be out somewhere having a conversation about Highlander 2, The Quickening, and mm-hmm. I'm like, what do I sound like? What kind of what kind of idiot do I sound like to somebody who doesn't know me? I mean, I probably – maybe I sound that bad to people who do know me, but
– No. All right. So – but anyway, coming back to Lanier here, he's getting – some of this applies to his case. But basically he's saying that, yeah, with context or the lack of context, you know, it comes down to the lack of individual control over context on social media. Mm-hmm. And he points to two extreme examples of this online to sort of, you know, better illustrate what's happening elsewhere. So like the two extreme cases would be when you have legit ads popping up on, say, terrorist recruitment videos on YouTube, which was a problem at least early on, is that you would have a legitimate advertiser and ultimately an illegitimate content or an illegitimate user, mm-hmm. and those would be matched together. In the context, it would be, you know, accidental and terrible.
Yeah. Platforms are juxtaposing content without understanding what that content is, and it very often doesn't reflect well on any of the content or certainly on some of it.
Right. And then the other example he brought up were when you have images of, say, women and girls whose images are sexualized or incorporated into violent media without their consent.
Yeah.
Again, that's like that's horrible, and it is an extreme example. But he argues that these extreme cases are possible because social media in general robs us of control over context. When we express ourselves online, we have no idea how that expression will be presented specifically to anybody else.
How often is there some public controversy about like a tweet? Where, mm-hmm. you know, somebody's like, hey, I found a tweet by X celebrity, you know, where they said something that looks really bad. And then that person defends themselves by saying, but you took it out of context.
Right.
And what you really feel about this, of course, is going to vary highly case by case, because maybe the context changes the meaning of it and maybe it doesn't.
Right. But when it's just presented as a snippet, Like that individual doesn't have control of the context. Maybe you have control of the context, but they don't. It's similar when, and we certainly see this in our political cycles as well. You know, something that a candidate said or wrote 10 years ago is you know, 20 years ago, what have you, is taken out as a snippet and presented, often without either without context or without like complete context as to what they were talking about.
Right. And, you know, in some cases, I mean, anytime you're quoting somebody, you are literally taking them out of context.
Right.
But like there are ways that being taken out of context can be pernicious. And then there are totally normal ways to do it, too.
But then again, is when something is taken out of context, there's kind of implied by that statement that context is usually in place.
Yeah.
And it's like saying who left this toy on the kitchen floor?
Uh-huh.
Let's put it back where it goes.
Right.
You don't want to live in a reality where the toys are always on the kitchen floor.
Right.
In which context is always out of place.
Yeah.
And so that's ultimately what he's getting at with social media. I'm going to read just a quote from his writings here. Quote, we have given up our connection to context. Social media mashes up meaning. Whatever you say will be contextualized and given meaning by the way algorithms and crowds of fake people who are actually algorithms match it up with what other people say. And he continues, speaking through social media isn't really speaking at all. Context is applied to what you say after you say it for someone else's purposes and profit. So essentially, we have surrendered context to the bummer platform, he's saying, rendering communication, quote, petty, shallow, and predictable. And as such, only the extreme voices, the worst of us, the loudest, the most acidic voices in our culture are going to be the ones that rise up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a whole other point he makes that I guess we're not going into in depth. But mm-hmm. I mean, he argues that these platforms necessarily promote the worst voices because the worst voices tend to drive engagement.
Right.
And the platforms want to drive engagement. What gets people using the platforms more, keeps people glued to Twitter, glued to Facebook, it's like whatever gins up the most negative emotion.
Right. And one quick word on engagement. One thing that he hammers home a number of times in the book is that when you hear the word engagement used in a social media context, what we're talking about is manipulation. So try to think about that next time if you're attending a meeting or reading an article, sort of like especially a pro-social media argument, about engagement. Just switch it out for the word manipulation and see how the taste fits you.
Mm-hmm.
But call it engagement, call it manipulation, whatever you like. It ends up creating this environment where everybody has to play that game in order mm-hmm. to be heard. And of course, that means it changes the way that, say, legitimate journalistic publications have to play the game. You know, you have mm-hmm. to lean into even more ridiculous headlines, for instance.
Yeah, clickbait.
Clickbait headlines in order to get that precious engagement. And that can have an eroding effect on the institutions of journalism themselves.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, that also goes with the – just like it is the most toxic or most whatever voices gin up the most negative emotion tend to be promoted on these platforms because they drive engagement. The same could be true of topics. Mm-hmm. So like you might not say that, well, my voice is toxic, but like whatever topics get people the most like upset and worried and aggravated and angry and all that, those topics are going to be favored by algorithms that are trying to increase engagement. So they know, you know, I think a lot of times publishers of online media know that there are certain topics that get people really upset, and those will be the highest performing articles or videos on social media those days.
Yeah, like think of chemicals as engagement. Like which chemicals are most engaging when you get them on your skin? You know, I instantly think of the ones that are going to sting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I can't think of anything but those stingy places on my skin. So, you know, again, one of the things that he comes back around to, too, is that, you know, what in this context situation is that what you were saying is only valuable or relevant insofar as it serves the platform. And again, you were not the customer on this platform. You are the product.
Mm-hmm.
The customers are those corporations or even state players that have the money to pay into the bummer system.
Yeah. Now, I was glad to see that he thinks podcasts have not been ruined yet.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a whole section in this this argument where he goes on to discuss podcasts and he makes an argument that podcasts are a rare area of our media that are not bummer yet.
But he does dream up and describe an absolute nightmare scenario for the future of podcasts that I hope never comes to pass. And while I was reading it, I was literally breaking out in sweats.
Yeah, I mean, because think about what we do on the show. You know, Stuff to Blow Your Mind is full of our personalities and our context. And we have the time and we have the space to present topics and ideas, to present our takes and topics and ideas, and a chance to share our personalities with the listener in a continuous, episodic manner. And as a result, you, the listener, you kind of know us. When we get something wrong, you have the context to understand what's going on generally, you know? And what we do on this show is not easily reduced to sound bites.
That's true. And this has been a problem before.
Right. Yeah. You should trust us on this because every now and then, not currently, but with a fair amount of regularity, someone will come to us and say, we need some sound bites.
Yeah. Give us 15-second clips of your show to show what the show is really about, to show what the show. That should be the clip. But no, it's like it's impossible to do when you try to pull out 15 seconds of our show. Nothing sounds right. I mean, nothing really makes sense on its own that's that short.
Yeah, we're not a zinger factory here. We're not calculating celebrities or wannabe celebrities, and we're not actively trying to play the soundbite game. We're not trying to play the bummer game with this show. But to clarify all this and really explain what he's talking about, Lanier devises a way to, quote, ruin podcasting. And then he adds, nobody do this, okay?
No, so somebody's going to do it.
I can see it happening.
Okay. So what does he say?
Basically, he describes a sort of podcast aggregator app that serves up snippets from podcasts with ads, of course. And the resulting situation would be that podcasts would then be incentivized to produce the sort of content that lends itself to this format. Mm-hmm. So fiery, you know, extreme, attention-grabbing sound bites.
So imagine clips of podcasts that are prioritized the same way that like tweets or Facebook posts or YouTube videos are prioritized by the content recommendation algorithms.
Right.
So just basically like pulling out the most egregious and like negative emotion conjuring moments of things.
Yeah. And the horrible
outside of context.
Yeah. And the horrible thing is that I can well imagine the marketing on such an aggregator. You know, it would be something like, don't have time for all the podcasts in your life? Well, now you don't have to. Let Telepod pick out the best parts of the shows and topics you love and serve it up to you in an easy to consume dose of wonder that fits into your busy schedule. And it sounds kind of convincing, you know? It's like, yeah, I'm busy. I don't have time for a whole bunch of hour-long podcasts. There's so many of them. Why not let the algorithm slice out just the choice cuts from all my favorite shows and give them to me?
Friends out there in podcast land, if this happens, boycott. Do not do this. Do not.
Unless you're already this type of show that is, you know, leaning. Because there are shows out there that do lend themselves well to this sort of thing, not necessarily by design, but just by sort of the type of topics they're already covering or the individuals involved, the personalities involved, you know, and it's not saying that, you know, that they're villains because of it. But I think there are a lot of great shows, and, you know, hopefully ours is on that list where, yeah, you can't cut out these little segments and expect the host organism to survive or to be able to communicate what it's trying to communicate.
It's going to be called Pod Butcher.
And if Pod Butcher came to pass, you know, I can tell you that we would not be able to produce the sort of show we produce now that you presumably like if we had to satisfy such an algorithm. And what you like would have even less to do with it because you would have handed your likes and choices over to Bummer, just as we, would have handed over context itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is Lanier is not the only person or the first really to recognize the death of context in social media. I was looking back at an article from 2012 in Forbes from Susan Tardonico, and she wrote, quote, every relevant metric shows that we are interacting at breakneck speed with frequency through social media. But are we really communicating? With 93% of our communication context stripped away, we are now attempting to forge relationships and make decisions based on phrases, abbreviations, snippets, emoticons, which may or may not be accurate representations of the truth. Mm-hmm. And we can actually go back even farther on this notion as well. On the show in the past, I've discussed the work of futurists Alvin and Heidi Toffler. They wrote an important 1970 book titled Future Shock,
yeah,
which was also made into an informative but also kind of more entertaining than informative Orson Welles narrated TV show that's wonderful in its own right. But the book was pretty great. And in it, they discuss the apparent and possible disruptions of the human experience and human society due to rapid advances in technology. And I would like everyone to consider this quote from Future Shock, 1970 again. Quote, rational behavior, in particular, depends upon a ceaseless flow of data from the environment. It depends upon the power of the individual to predict, with at least fair success, the outcome of his own actions. To do this, he must be able to predict how the environment will respond to his acts. Sanity itself thus hinges on man's ability to predict his immediate personal future on the basis of information fed him by the environment. And me personally, I would extrapolate this to the digital environment that we've grown increasingly dependent upon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every day, like multiple times a day, over and over again, we're plugging into the digital environment and checking out of our physical environment as being a main determiner of our behavior.
But it's not an environment that's chiefly mechanically dominated by things like, everyday Newtonian physics that we can predict pretty well.
Right.
It's more like the main environments that we're participating in are like a giant, super complex slot machine.
Yeah.
Where you pull the lever and, you can pull the lever in a few different kinds of ways and you don't know exactly what's going to come back out at you.
So this is the digital context, the digital environment.
Uh-huh.
And I want everyone to keep that in mind as I continue reading this quote from the Tofflers here. Quote, when the individual is plunged into a fast and irregularly changing situation or a novelty-loaded context, however, his predictive accuracy plummets. He can no longer make the reasonably correct assessments on which rational behavior is dependent. To compensate for this, to bring his accuracy up to the normal level again, he must scoop up and process far more information than before, and he must do this at extremely high rates of speed. In short, the more rapidly changing and novel the environment, the more information the individual needs to process in order to make effective rational decisions. And of course, there are limits to our speed.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Tofflers, I think, really strike a chord with our current situation in this passage, at least from my standpoint. I mean, sanity itself hinges on our ability to predict our immediate personal future on the basis of information fed to us by the digital environment. And here we are attempting to communicate, act, and absorb knowledge in a social media environment that makes it impossible to control the information fed to us, absorb it all properly, and control the context of our own voices.
Yeah, all true. I think it's kind of scary. I mean, to think about the fact that I'm quite sure that there is nobody at Facebook who fully understands all the decisions made by the content recommendation algorithm that creates the Facebook feed. Right. I mean, maybe they have some way of going through if they could look at an individual one and say, OK, here are probably some reasons why you were shown this, why you were shown that. But they can't they can't predict it all. You know, you can't generate one of these feeds just, with your own brain.
Yeah. I mean, and we're ultimately just continuing to understand what and to what extent, the harm is. Mm-hmm. I was looking around at some various, posts and sort of industry thoughts about how social media has been linked to struggles with depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
And there are actually some serious discussions going on within the journalism field where journalists often feel the need to maintain a social media presence or are mandated to and are forced to deal with the resulting actual trauma and PTSD.
Oh, man. If you're a journalist, especially working in some kinds of fields, you mm-hmm. are going to be inundated day in and day out with hateful messaging from people who don't like whatever you're saying or doing in your career, people telling you to go kill yourself, people telling you that you're a fraud. And,
heaven forbid your gender identity, your race or what have you, happens to put you in the lines of sights of, particular troll groups on social media.
Totally. And I know that there is a kind of common reaction, I think, especially from people who don't deal with this problem themselves, mm-hmm. to say like, you know, it's just people, it's just trolling, just get over it. You know, it's just trolling. Like, you are probably just failing to imagine what it is like to actually face this kind of like hate and abuse all the time. You know, we're highly social creatures. I mean, even if you don't actually fear violence against yourself, which mm-hmm. you might have good reason to, depending on, you know, who you are and who these people are and what they say. But
right. I mean, if anything should be clear, is that the digital world and the physical world are not separated by an impassable chasm, you know?
Right.
I mean,
online is real life.
It is real life. And we see violence stemming from digital activities.
Yeah. But even if you're not in that category, dealing with an onslaught of just hate and abuse all the time is life ruining.
Yeah, and generally we're not trained to deal with it. So a lot of the discussions going on in journalism are you know, should we be training people to cope with the flood of negative commentary and effectively sort out what should be ignored, what requires attention, and what constitutes an actual threat that should be, you know, reported to authorities?
Yeah, and to reiterate, of course, it's not just journalists that deal with this kind right. of issue, but like journalism is one field where a lot of times people have to be on these platforms whether they want to be or not, and also by the nature of their work just attract a lot of negative attention.
Right. If someone wants to learn more about this, I should point out that Kyle Bessie wrote a great post just last month at journalism.co.uk titled "How Social Media Impacts Mental Health in Journalists." And of course, in thinking about all of this, you know, it comes back to the fact that like this is the reality we've built for ourselves, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, it's through this complex interface of, you know, of corporate interests and algorithms and so forth. But still, like, this is the world we've made for ourselves. We've created, you know, through our use of technology, these new pitfalls and these new perils to social engagement.
All right, we need to take another break, but after this, we will be back with more of our discussion.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential, and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear.
We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, we're back.
So one of Jaron Lanier's arguments from this book, 10 Arguments to, what is it? How exactly does it go? For deleting your social media accounts right now? Yeah, there it is. One of them is that, quote, social media hates your soul. Now, Robert, what are we to make of this?
So this is argument 10. So mm-hmm. This is the final all-encompassing argument. So in a sense, it's almost a little bit unfair for me to skip to it because it hinges upon all the arguments that he's made. Mm-hmm. But
it's not going to spoil the book.
No, it's not. But to give you a taste of it, I'm just going to read the second paragraph from the first page of this argument. Quote, to review, your understanding of others has been disrupted because you don't know what they've experienced in their feeds. While the reverse is also true, the empathy others might offer you is challenged because you can't know the context in which you'll be understood. You're probably becoming more of an but you're also probably sadder, another pair of bummer disruptions that are mirror images. Your ability to know the world, to know truth, has been degraded, while the world's ability to know you has been corrupted. Politics has become unreal and terrifying, while economics has become unreal and unsustainable, two sides of the same coin.
That's pretty bleak, and it's hard to imagine just from that paragraph that he is ultimately presenting an optimistic message. Though he is.
He is, yeah. But, you know, he's saying, though, that, look, Bummer's behavioral modification is taking place not only at an individual scale, but at a societal scale. In this, its reach is more like a religion, and it concerns not only the way you live your life online, but what it means to be a person at all.
Yeah,
which again may sound a bit extreme and a bit out there, but I think he really makes a strong case for this. First of all, coming back to free will, which we talked about earlier, free will is central to most religions. You're hard pressed to find a spiritual model in which humans are mere automatons. But under Bummer, he argues, free will isn't destroyed, but it is assaulted. It's degraded. You have less of it, and certain parties wind up with more alongside, you know, their wealth and power that they've already accumulated or are accumulating as they take more and more of your free will.
You know, and this actually, I think, does go along with, I don't know. So we've talked before about the coherence of the idea of free will on this mm-hmm. show. And I'm sure we're going to get a lot of kind of like a materialist pushback yeah. on the idea of free will, saying, hey, wait a minute, free will is an incoherent concept. I think you could make that argument based on some definitions of free will. But in this sense, the sense that he uses it, I think free will is an important thing to consider and is a real concept. Basically, free will means the feeling that you have control over your own behavior by understanding the influences on yourself and thinking about them consciously.
Right.
And, you know, you can never understand all of the influences on yourself, but there are definitely ways in which you can be in a system where you feel like you understand most of the inputs that are coming in on you and you can process them consciously in your decision making versus a system like a kind of a behavioral modification system where you in fact don't know you're being influenced. You don't know who's influencing you, and this is all opaque. You're just suddenly producing behaviors that feel alien and you don't know why you're doing them.
Yes. Now, another religion-based argument he makes in this chapter is that Bummer ultimately wants you to believe it is the internet and it is the main part of your devices. But it ultimately is separate. He says you can have the internet without social media, and he makes a strong argument for that.
That's ultimately, I think, his point is that you could have a great internet just by sort of switching everything from the behavior modification pay for model to a subscription model where you could have something like Facebook, but instead of modifying your behavior to pay for it, you just pay to get access.
Right. And Lanier argues that, in the same way that Protestants rejected papal indulgences, you can reject the social media but keep the internet. You can reject the version of your faith that is tiresome or offensive or dangerous and keep the parts that work for you. I mean, I've said that before regarding just religion in general, whatever religion you adhere to. I can almost guarantee you there is some version of it that is ultimately more accepting and more liberal in its outlook. Mm-hmm. Whether it's in your immediate area or you have to go out to find it is another issue. He also makes the argument that Bummer activates the pack setting of our mind, and in doing so, it quote resurrects old conflicts that had been associated with religion in order to engage people as intensely as possible. So basically, social media riles us up and causes the kind of like pack mentality and tribalism that normally you would have to look to a religion to do.
Yeah. Well, this is part of an earlier argument in the book, but basically it's part of an argument he makes about how social media is making us meaner and worse by triggering types of thought patterns that are more associated with obsession with hierarchies and in-group, out-group thinking and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And
domination mentality.
Yeah. Dominator culture. And then he also points out that Bummer ultimately asks you to have faith, not in God or gods or a goddess, but in the almighty algorithms that decide what slice of news, political commentary, fake news, parody, conspiracy theory, or just outright hate you see in your feed. And that it's, entirely anti-enlightenment in that regard, in that it makes learning subservient to human power hierarchies.
Well, yeah. I mean, by allowing these algorithms to control what you see all day, you are in practice, whether you think about this or not, in practice you're giving your consent to somebody to shape who you become as a person.
Right.
And that's a lot of power. That's a lot of faith to put in some business.
He goes on from here to discuss another destructive force in human discourse, memes.
Oh.
This is one of these areas where when I talk about memes, I feel like I often just come off like an old person, an old grumpy person who doesn't understand how the kids talk,
Complaining about memes. But yeah. No, I am with you there. Even when I see a meme that's funny, and I see them all the time, I'm not above memes. It's like, yeah, some are really funny and I like them. But there's a part of me that always sort of rebels, and I think it has to do with what we were talking about context earlier. Mm-hmm. I worry about meme culture degrading the context of original images and text in a way that just constantly batters down our defenses and batters down our desire to understand things in their original meaning.
Yeah, he writes that memes may at first, when we first engage with them, they might seem to amplify what we're feeling or trying to say.
Yeah.
And for instance, somebody posts a bit of it's news or a thought, and you back it up with like, what do you see in so many Facebook responses or I guess on other social media platforms as well? You see like GIFs and memes that seem to be sort of an amen, bro. Other kind of an argument or some other interaction with the content. But But ultimately, this feeling of amplification is an illusion. You're only reinforcing the notion that virality is truth. Whatever is the most viral is rewarded, and that's a key part of Bummer's design.
Uh-huh.
But just because it's viral does not mean it is the truth.
Right.
And which seems like an overstatement of the obvious when I say it like that. But again, don't think about think about the way we interact with it and the way we use memes.
Mm-hmm. I mean. If you go to any fact-checking website, just pick your favorite, PolitiFact or whatever, mm-hmm. And you scroll down and you scroll down to see, truth ratings by source,
mm-hmm.
What's always the number one source of total fabrications? You might think of immediately your least favorite politician, but no, it's not a person. It's a viral image.
Right.
Viral image is always the number one source of false facts that are spreading around the internet. Why is that? Well, because viral image is an extremely powerful method for spreading falsehoods. It spreads way easier than somebody going on TV and saying them.
Lanier goes on from here to also point out that many of these bummer companies and some of the key individuals associated with them, they also put a lot of emphasis on grander ideas of organizing all information, of providing communities with purpose, of creating AI, and ultimately he says that this is a danger to personhood. There's a spiritual danger to us in our sense of personhood when we start putting too much emphasis on these non-human models of thinking and humanity,
mm-hmm.
Which again, this is getting into kind of headier territory than most of the book, but I think it's an interesting case. How are these powerful corporations thinking about what it is to be human, and then how is that changing the definition? At least the spiritual definition and the self-defining principle of personhood. So again, this argument in the book, I think there is a possibility that you hear this or even you read it and you start asking yourself, well, is that really the case? Are we really thinking about social media like it's a religion? Is it actually serving a purpose that is akin to religion? And I think he makes a strong case. I think it's one of those things where you kind of you wake up one day and you realize, oh, I have joined the church of social media, mm-hmm. and I've been attending services for years, uh-huh. and I didn't quite realize it. You tend to think of a religion as a church or a temple, as these images of gods, mm-hmm. and you don't think of the roles that they play in a culture. And how even as, for the most part in many cultures, there is a movement away from these organized religions. There's this possibility that we are rebuilding something that operates in much the same way.
Or maybe in just some of the same worst ways.
Yeah,
without some of the same
without
best
providing
things.
Some of the best. Because as I've discussed in the show before, I think religion and spirituality, that they both have tremendous benefits to individuals and certainly to societies. Mm-hmm. And, you can get that sense of community with a religious organization. They can do a great deal of harm if they are, if they have toxic beliefs wound up into their fabric.
Mm-hmm. Or they promote toxic personality dynamics sometimes.
Yes, certainly. But what we don't want to do is certainly to put all of that aside and then rebuild, like you say, a new digital religion that is based on most of the worst qualities of what came before.
Yeah. I find most of this book a pretty compelling message. But I do want to emphasize again that it's it emphasizes a lot of what's negative about the current model of social media. But even with these bummer companies, he doesn't demonize. He's not saying, and we're not saying that all the people who work at these companies are bad people. We're not even saying that necessarily all the things done by these companies or all their products are bad. I mean, Facebook and Google and all these companies have they provide real technologies and real products that do great things for people's lives. They make all kinds of things easier. They provide provide enormous wealth and convenience and stuff like that. So it's not that like everything these companies do is bad. I mean, that's not true by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that there are certain elements about the business model of especially the social media platforms, and specifically it's the element that it's behavior modification for rent, that really do need to be reformed. And that's where his recommendation comes in. He says, if you want to give these companies financial incentive to reform, delete your accounts.
Right. Yeah. The bummer illness is there in social media.
Yeah.
And the only way to get rid of it, to rid the host of that infection, is to step away from it, to create this financial incentive for these corporations to change. And ultimately, yeah, he has this positive view, this optimistic view that it can change, that if we were to do this, if we were all to do this, not all at once, but perhaps this gradual awakening to the reality, you know, we could reach the point where social media can exist in a form that is not demeaning of our personhood, that is not modifying our behavior to the benefit of unknown corporations or by state or non-state players.
Yes. There are a ton of other arguments he gets into in the book that we did not have time to address today. Of course, we're not going to address everything in the book. If we can get Jaron Lanier to come on the show sometime, I'd be interested in talking about some of the other ones. Especially. But also, I'm interested in hearing from listeners who disagree, maybe who agree or disagree, because one thing I recognize is that I think I have an emotional predisposition to bias in favor of these arguments. Mm-hmm. Simply because I feel like in my life I have witnessed a lot of negativity growing out of social media. I personally emotionally don't like platforms like Facebook and Twitter, and so I've got a predisposition that makes this all seem good to me. So I'd be interested in hearing the arguments presented to the contrary that would go against my biases, that say no, maybe it's not as bad as he's representing.
Right, and likewise, if anyone out there has quit social media, if you have deleted your social media accounts, I'd be interested to hear your take on how that went. Why did you do it? Did you accomplish what you hoped to accomplish by stepping away? All this is a fair game for discussion. So again, the title of the book is 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now by Jaron Lanier. That's Lanier. It's as of this recording, it's currently available in hardback, and it's coming out in paperback very soon.
Yeah, if it's not out by the time this episode publishes, it will be coming out soon.
Yeah, so again, highly recommend this read, and would love to hear from listeners who read it as well. In the meantime, if you want to follow what we do, head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. And if you want to support the show, rate and review us wherever you have the power to do so, and make sure you have subscribed.
Huge thanks to our excellent audio producer, Maya Cole. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on today's episode, to suggest a topic for the future, to follow up on any of the prompts we just issued, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com. Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.